morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, February the 25th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is met with diplomatic silence in Africa, except for a comment from Kenya's ambassador to the UN.
Kenya rejects such a yearning from being pursued by force. We must complete our recovery from the embers of dead empires in a way that does not plunge us back into new forms of domination and oppression.
That is Kenya's ambassador to the UN, Martin Kimani. And South Africa is calling on Moscow to withdraw its forces from Ukraine in line with the United Nations Charter. Observers ask how the invasion of Ukraine will impact. Observers are asking how the invasion of Ukraine will impact Russia's trade, aid, and military training with Africa.
A lot of attention will be taken away from conflicts that are quite urgent here in Africa, such again as Sahel, the conflict in Mozambique, and the conflict in Ethiopia.
Pauline Bax is the Deputy Director for International Crisis Group in Johannesburg. We'll have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has so far been met with diplomatic silence in Africa, except for a comment made by Kenya's ambassador to the UN earlier this week. Only say that while many Africans disagree with Russia's use of force, the continent's governments are aware of Moscow's power on the world stage. Mohamed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Ukraine's ambassador to Kenya, Andy Previn, spoke to reporters in Nairobi and appealed to the international community to help his country against Russia's invasion.
Today, the future of Europe and future of the world is at stake. Today, Ukraine calls on the international community to take following actions, to implement devastating sanctions on Russia now, without any delay.
But so far, African governments have said nothing about the Russian aggression. One exception is Kenya, whose ambassador to the UN, Martin Kimani, condemned the prospect of an invasion Monday, 3 days before Russian forces entered Ukraine.
Kenya rejects such a yearning from being pursued by force. We must complete our recovery from the embers of dead empires in a way that does not plunge us back into new forms of domination and oppression.
Separately, South Africa issued a statement Wednesday urging Ukraine and Russia to find a way to de-escalate tensions. Stephen Grast is the head of the Russia-Africa program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. He says African states are well aware of Russia's power in the international system.
African countries are also mindful of the place that the role that Russia plays in international politics. It's a supporter without asking about governance questions, without asking about the internal affairs of countries. There was a big Russia-Africa summit in 2019 in Sochi, where 43 African leaders went. Russia is definitely wooing the continent, and that may weigh on how critical countries are going to be.
But Grad says in principle, African government opposed the idea of rearranging borders by force.
We were left with colonial borders at the end of the 19th century. And when our countries became independent, we decided that we would respect those borders, even though they cut off ethnic groups and language groups and so on and so forth. Otherwise, it's a recipe for total disaster. So I think the fact that there is some political affinity between Russia and African countries would probably make the statements more muted, but I think also African countries will stand up for their principles, and one of those is territorial integrity and sovereignty.
Kenyan international relations expert Kizito Sabala says he doubts the Kenyan ambassador's words at the UN will affect Nairobi's relation with Moscow.
Russia probably is going to ignore this statement, just like any other from the US or any other partner, and they are just going to proceed on what they want to do and what they think that is right. But I think in terms of relations, I don't think it's going to affect adversely Kenya-Russia relations.
Russia has exerted increasing influence in Burkina Faso, the Central African Republic, Mali and Libya in recent years. Some governments have used Russian mercenaries to battle insurgent groups. The mercenaries are accused of widespread abuses against civilians. The Russian government denies any link to the mercenaries, Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And as much of the world denounced Russia's invasion of Ukraine Thursday, the Central African Republic's capital, Bangui, hosted a tribute to Russian paramilitary groups that helped beat back rebels a year ago. Clément de Roma reports from Bangui.
In Bangui's city center, a human-sized statue erected last year depicts Central African and Russian security forces protecting a woman and a child. As Western countries tried in vain Wednesday to prevent Russian military aggression against Ukraine, about 100 Central Africans gathered at the monument holding Russian flags. The group was paying tribute to Russian mercenaries who helped defend the capital, Bangui, last year against rebels. Blaise Didacien Kosimachi organized the ceremony. He heads the National Galaxy Platform, a Central African group close to the government that often holds protests against France and the United Nations.
Nous profitons de votre micro pour dire non à tout ce qui est campagne de dénigrement.
He says they say no to everything that is a smear campaign against our army and our Russians, especially by the international press who qualify the Russians as mercenaries. Kosimachi adds, no, the Russians are not here to make exactions. The Russians did nothing. By exactions, Kosimachi means crimes such as rapes and killings. UN experts accuse Russian mercenaries of abusing civilians in the CAR and several other countries. Several of those celebrating the anniversary wore T-shirts that read, I am Wagner, a reference to the Wagner Group, the shadowy Russian network that supplied the mercenaries. Analysts say Russian President Vladimir Putin's ally, Yevgeny Prigozhin, is behind the Wagner Group. Wagner's fighters provide security for CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra and have been spotted from Syria to Libya and from Mozambique to Mali. Yefi Keza is a member of the ruling United Hearts Movement Party. He says they are changing history. You see what is happening in Mali, says Keza. This is a strong message that I'm sending to the French embassy today, he says. It is time to cooperate with President Touadéra and to try and liberate the country together, says Keza. We're grateful to the Russians. We are here today, he says, and we have invited the Russians to join us to thank them along with the National Army. No Russians attending the celebration in Bangui, but one Central African Army commander was in the crowd. One man held a sign that read, Russia will save the Donbass from war, referring to the area in southeast Ukraine that Russia declared independent this week before launching its invasion. A CAR government spokesman declined to comment on the celebration. Clément de Roma for VOA News, Bangui, Central African Republic.
And Russia has played an increasing role in Africa through trade, aid, military trainings, and paramilitary security. Analysts say the future of the relationship will be tested as Moscow's tensions with the West escalate amid the Ukrainian conflict. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
The South African government condemned Russia's actions in a statement saying, quote, it is dismayed at the escalation of the conflict in Ukraine and calls on Russia to immediately withdraw its forces from Ukraine in line with the United Nations Charter. Other African countries remained quiet Thursday as Russian forces pushed into Ukraine. Russia has increased its presence on the continent in recent years and is scheduled to host a Russia-Africa summit this November. Regardless of how African nations react to Russia's invasion going forward, analysts say the continent will feel repercussions. Irina Filatova is a professor at Russia's Higher School of Economics University.
Will it be the new Cold War or will it be the new Hot War? We still do not know. But whatever it is, Africa is going to be one of the victims of it.
Countries reliant on imported oil and gas, like South Africa, will feel the pain of skyrocketing prices. Northern African countries that import grains from Ukraine will feel disruptions in supply and price. The conflict could also impact the availability of funding and resources for international development and aid that many African countries rely on. Zanka Kachur is a researcher at the Center for Sustainability Transitions at South Africa's Stellenbosch University.
It's also going to create a long-term distraction from and attention from the Sustainable Development Goals. So we can expect that budgets of states around the world will be gearing towards more militarization and not the developmental goals.
The conflict not only risks disruption to aid, but also military and peacekeeping support on the continent. Pauline Bax is the Deputy Director for the International Crisis Group in Johannesburg.
A lot of attention will be taken away from conflicts that are quite urgent here in Africa, such again as the Sahel, the conflict in Mozambique, and the conflict in Ethiopia. So a lot of diplomatic efforts will have to be put in the Ukraine crisis now, and has already been put in it to the detriment of other crises here in Africa.
However, the conflict could also bring opportunities. Couture says African leaders should call for changes in global power structures, especially at the United Nations. Russia is one of 5 permanent members of the UN Security Council.
This is an opportunity to show that the UN system is ineffective if the aggressor is one of the permanent members of the UN Security Council. This is a good time for African countries to talk about the change of the global system of international relations and to redistribute power.
Analysts note it's too early to be sure how the conflict in Ukraine will affect countries thousands of kilometers away. But to the extent the world order is being altered, Africa will feel the impact. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Earlier this month, a U.S. federal judge struck down a rule requiring diversity visa applicants to obtain passports before they could enter an annual lottery for the U.S. entry visa. Each year, the diversity visa program receives about 14 million applicants and gives a path to up to 50,000 lottery winners from underrepresented countries to permanent residency in the U.S. In 2019, the U.S. State Department enacted the passport requirement without giving the public an opportunity to comment on it. In his ruling, Judge Timothy J. Kelly in Washington found the regulations were enacted unlawfully because they skipped the public comment period required by the Administrative Procedure Act. That's the rule that governs the process by which federal agencies develop and issue regulations. Diana Konate is the policy director at African Communities Together, an organization of African immigrants fighting for civil rights, opportunity, and a better life for African immigrant families in the U.S. The organization joined the lawsuit on behalf of the plaintiffs. So what kind of changes did the previous administration, the Trump administration, make to the program, and what kind of impact did it have on it and its potential beneficiaries?
So when Trump came into office, he was always railing against the diversity visa program. He, you know, did what he could to eliminate the program, along with, several Republicans in Congress, but they were never successful in doing that. But one of the things that he was successful in doing was implementing a rule that required anybody who was planning to apply for the diversity visa program to secure a valid passport, because that passport number would be required to apply for the program. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it just doesn't make sense to spend all that money to get passports for you and all your family members before even knowing that you're going to win this lottery.
Now, aside from, financial costs, what other barriers are there in obtaining a passport in some of these countries?
I mean, depending on the country, sometimes there are a lot of logistical barriers. So sometimes you have to travel from maybe a rural area and go into the city. Some countries we saw would run out of passport papers. So, you know, some countries didn't even have the resources at certain times to even print the passports for people to have. So it just really, you know, in our view, was an unnecessary barrier for the government to put up. And what we saw once that barrier did go up was a significant drop in diversity visa applications. So prior to the passport requirement going into effect, we had about over 14 million applications to the diversity visa program. After that rule went into effect, it dropped down to 6 million. So there was a significant drop of people who were able to apply. That was the first year. The second year, the number still was very, you know, was still just as low. I think it was 7 million who applied. So as long as the rule continues to be in place, millions of people cannot access the program.
And so what was the basis for the judge to overturn the passport rule?
So the judge said that the rule did not go through the proper procedure. So when a rule like this is issued, it's supposed to go through something called notice and comment, public notice and comment, and it gives the American public an opportunity to voice their opinion on you know, this proposed regulation. So the Trump administration did not go through that process. It said that it had an exemption, a foreign affairs exemption, and didn't need to go to, through that process. But the court said that the exemption did not apply. And so it was required to go through that process. And because it did not go through that process, that rule was unlawful.
That was Diana Konate, the policy director at African Communities Together, an organization of African immigrants fighting for civil rights, opportunity, and a better life for African immigrant families in the U.S. I reached her at her offices in Washington, D.C. In Burundi, the opposition leader Agathon Rwasa says that there is an increased number of human rights violations despite the country's improved relations with the international community. The National Congress for Liberty leader says his supporters have continued to be arbitrarily arrested or tortured. Moses Havyarimana reports.
As the National Independent Human Rights Commission presented its annual report last week, its chairman said that the human rights situation in the country had improved despite some still existing cases recorded since last year. Sixty Vigny is the chairman of the commission. He said that the Independent National Human Rights Commission has registered 7 cases of allegations of torture and conducted investigations to verify the allegations and has already submitted 3 cases to the ministry responsible. According to a report released by the commission, 35 cases of forced disappearances have been recorded. Agathon Rwasa is the opposition leader of the National Congress for Liberty.
If there was improvement, who can tell me why people are still arrested abusively? Why do people disappear? Why do people are executed extrajudicially? And besides this, one has to remember, in Burundi, we abolished the death penalty. So why should one be arrested and then be found just dead somewhere, thrown either in a river or in a bush?
Rwasa, who was a presidential candidate in 2020 general elections, said that political space in Burundi has shrunk and his supporters are continuing to be arrested or killed.
I think if one could say that human rights has been improved, what will he tell us about those who were killed in some mysterious ambushes in Muranja and Mwaro some couple of months ago? No, I think there is a kind of complicity among the rulers of this world, unfortunately.
Last week, Burundi's president attended the European Union and the African Union summit in Belgium's capital, weeks after the European Union lifted sanctions against the country. President Evariste Ndayishimiye met exiled Burundi human rights activists. Among them was Pierre Claverie Mbonima, who intends to return to Burundi but questioned the government's stand on human rights. He said that he and others asked the president why human rights are floated in Burundi and if the situation that made him flee the country is still existing. He said that there's no way he could return as the killers of his son and his in-laws are yet to be prosecuted. The European Union and the United States lifted sanctions against Burundi following the 2020 general elections, which were said to be free and fair. However, rights activists in exile say protection of human rights in the country is not yet satisfying for their return. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Let's go to Abuja with Samson Omale. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport with the news from the global football governing body, FIFA, that it has suspended Zimbabwe and Kenya from international competitions as a result of government interference in the running of their national soccer bodies. Zimbabwe was banned after its government-run Sports and Recreation Commission refused to relinquish control of the Zimbabwe Football Association and reinstate the federation's leadership. ZIFA officials were removed from office in November 2021 on allegations of corruption. Kenya, on the other hand, was banned after its sports ministry also removed the Soccer Federation's leaders and accused them of corruption. Kenya's soccer president, Nick Mwemwa, is facing criminal charges. FIFA president Gianni Infantino on Thursday announced the bans.
We had to suspend two of our member associations, Kenya and Zimbabwe, both for government interference in the activities of the football association. So these associations are suspended from all footballing activities with immediate effect. And they know what needs to be done for them to be readmitted or for the suspension to be lifted.
Ahead of the All African Games, the Ghana Minister of Youth and Sport, Mustafa Usif, says hosting the 2023 African Games in Ghana will be of immense benefit to the country's sports development. August 2023 has been identified as the most likely window for the next edition of the African Games, and Usif expressed optimism that construction is on schedule. At least 18 sports are expected to be on the program. Here is Mustafa Usif, Ghana's Minister of Youth and Sports.
The eventual impact on society is that people learn to peacefully coexist and resolve their differences more amicably rather than through violence means. It is for this reason and many more that the government of Ghana and indeed the forefathers of the continent of Africa deem it convenient to establish and support the organization of the African Games since 1965.
In rugby news, Ugandan rugby sevens team has returned from a two-week training camp in Stellenbosch, South Africa, where they camped to intensify preparations for the forthcoming 2022 Rugby Africa Men's Sevens Cup. The continental event will attract 14 participating nations. It will be double as a qualification pathway to the 2022 Rugby Sevens World Cup slated to take place in South Africa in September. Timothy Kisiga is a member of the Uganda Rugby Sevens.
The effort was enormous, the energy, the mental presence, the presence of mind was all. It was really a good session.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great weekend. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great weekend ahead, Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. In honor of Black History Month, we speak with a leader in the conservative political movement in the United States, former president of the Heritage Foundation, Kay James, who is now serving as Secretary of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We'll talk with Ms. James about a range of issues, including the impending appointment of a Black woman to the Supreme Court. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. 50 years ago, U.S. President Richard Nixon took a key step to normalizing relations between Washington and China. Nixon's historic trip to three Chinese cities was the first time a U.S. president had visited the People's Republic of China. It ended 25 years of diplomatic isolation. The state of relations 50 years hence, that's in count.